Blog Talk Radio.
Listening and being part of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We've covered so many subjects over the past 5 years plus, most of them about the airline we hold so dear to our hearts, Eastern Airlines. Tonight we'll talk about whatever's on your mind and then some. But first, let's do some housekeeping for our little kitchen table radio show. We hope that you'll participate and be on board our beautiful Boeing 737-800 aircraft and be a part of our show. For those of you listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is to call us at area code 213-816-1611 and it will put you on Neil's producer's board. He can open your mic telephone. And you can tell us what's on your mind or add to the subject being discussed. Now remember, unless we have opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press the number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. Those who cannot listen in on your computer can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard, area code 213-816-1611. And keep in mind that your telephone microphone picks up any noises that might be in the background around you, so make sure you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. If you prefer to listen on your computer, you can tune us in by going to www.ealradioshow.com or www.repaonline.com. And at either of these websites, you'll see a radio icon that says Blog Talk Radio. So just click on the arrow in the circle at 7 p.m. and join us for Eastern Airlines Talk Radio. Now, flight 266 is in position on runway 9 left in Miami.
Eastern 266, are you ready for takeoff?
Miami Tower Eastern 266, affirmative. We are ready to go.
Eastern 266, the winds are from the east at 5 knots, and you're clear for takeoff.
Roger, Miami. Eastern 266 is on the roll.
Oh, what a wonderful sound. Airplane taking off and also the sound of the wheels touching down at the end of the trip. Since our show is an open mic format tonight, let's start off with this song from the past and see if you can identify the song and the singer as well. And if you can do that, then please let us know after the song has been played. And I think the lyrics are going to give away the title, but tell me who sang the song. Might be a gift there for you. if I can put the needle on it. And, some reason or another, well, come on. There we go. I got that big controller cranked up.
That's Billy Joel.
So much to talk about, so we're just gonna fade Billy Joel out and start our show. I don't know why I chose that. Maybe that old man sitting there at the bar drinking tonic and gin might have been me at one time. But
for Jim Hart.
yeah, we miss Jim Hart tonight, and folks, he and Trudy, took a flight up north once again. Every year they go to Martha's Vineyard, and we hope they enjoy the summer there, and Trudy will be doing fine in that different climate, the northern climate. So we miss you, Jim. Take care of Trudy. Chuck, what's in the news?
Well, you may have seen this in the news last week. A flight attendant had been indicted after allegedly stealing nearly 1,500 mini bottles of liquor from Delta Airlines and then selling them online. The Shelby County District Attorney's Office announced today in Tennessee. Rachel Trevor, employed by Delta's regional affiliate Endeavor Air, allegedly sneaked 50 milliliters bottles of rum, vodka, gin, whiskey, and other alcoholic beverages into her bags and off the airplane before posting them for sale online for $1 each. They typically retail in the airplane for $8 in flight. Trevor, 28, was busted in November after an undercover agent allegedly purchased some of the alcohol, and the Memphis woman now faces criminal charges of theft, unlawful sale of alcohol, unauthorized transportation and storage of alcohol for sale. An official says Endeavor Air expects nothing short of the highest standard of integrity from its employees and takes seriously any activity that falls short of that expectation. This employee is no longer employed at the airline. Duh. And we will continue to work with the airlines as with the authorities as needed, the company said in a statement. ABC News has been unable to reach Trevor, and it's unclear whether she has a lawyer or entered a plea. The Shelby County District Attorney's Office has not responded to ABC News' request for a comment. Anybody got anything on that one?
Well, Steve, did you ever hear of any misallocation of booze on the flights?
Why do you ask Steve that?
I think I've heard of it being done.
Yes, I have experienced it. I have been offered some booze off of airplanes on layovers, but of course I refuse to accept it.
Uh-oh.
LOL.
Laugh out loud, yeah. Well, I'm sure it has been done, and probably this gal isn't the only one that is still doing it today. I guess it's mighty tempting, but she must have found a market and a way of marketing that. I guess Craigslist might be an easy way of moving that liquor.
eBay.
Oh,
eBay.
Well,
you could sell anything on eBay.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to be out willing to buy it.
We had one of our pilots, a first officer in Atlanta, when I first got to Atlanta, and I had met him one time, and I think it was on a training flight. He was a second officer, and I think I was a second officer along at that time on the Electra. And he had gone into the radio room, the radio repair shop in Atlanta, and he had taken several of the Collins radio equipment home with him and turned around and sold those son of a guns. So, of course, they caught him and fired him, and I think he served some jail time for having done that.
Back in those days, Collins was the top best avionics in the airplane.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what they use nowadays. Well, we've got our board lit up, so if any of our callers would like to join us in our conversation tonight, please just walk over anybody you hear, and we'd be happy to hear you and talk with you. And if you have anything you want to add to our show tonight, please do so. I see our board is lit up, so there are a lot of different area codes here. So... Just help us out, if you would. Now, we do have another thing that happened last week in the last week's news. Don or Dorothy, would you like to start the article out?
Yeah, I'll start it, Neil. Another article last week reminded us of the tragic accident that happened 20 years ago. The article headline stated, "It vanished barely without a trace." ValueJet 592, with 110 passengers on board, plunged into the Florida Everglades after taking off from Miami International Airport 20 years ago, May 11th, 1996. This was front page of May 12th, 1996, Miami Herald. The DC-9 had traveled less than 100 miles west of the airport when the crew reported smoke in the cockpit. The pilot turned around and tried to make it back. The jet did not make it. ValueJet 592, bound for Atlanta, slammed nose first into the muck and disappeared under the earth. Investigators later determined that 144 oxygen-generated canisters were improperly secured, labeled, and packaged in the cargo hold of the aircraft. There was no smoke detection or suppression system in the cargo bin. The containers, which would generate 500-degree heat when triggered, did not have safety caps. A year after the disaster, the ValuJet name was gone from the skies, merging with another airline, which I believe was Southwest. By 2001, the Federal Aviation Administration bolstered its hazardous materials inspection program. On this 20th anniversary of the crash, relatives will gather at the memorial and board airboats to visit the tragic site. George.
George is not able to be with us tonight, so here is one of the Miami. George, are you here? Okay. Here's one of the Miami Herald's breaking news stories of the tragedy published May 12, 1996. And it talks about the airboat and helicopter rescuers searching the muck and shallow water of the Everglades. But they quickly stared at the grim reality that none of the 109 people on board of a ValuJet DC-9 survived when their plane slammed into the earth west of Miami International Airport on Saturday. Oh, no, not the day before Mother's Day, said one frustrated Metro firefighter, pulling off his sweaty flame-retardant gear. The feeling of hopelessness struck even harder at families of the passengers. There doesn't seem to be any hope, said Stuart P. Thomas of Coral Gables, whose daughter, son-in-law, and granddaughter were on the plane. The screens on TV have gotten pretty close. I can't see any metal larger than a dishpan. Firefighters, paramedics, and police officers who have trained for just such a tragedy could do little Saturday afternoon but slosh through the mud. At times it seemed only the dragonflies and mosquitoes easily visited the wreckage. Bodies were sighted, but fuel that could have been easily ignited and the natural terrain hampered rescue efforts to the point where even airboats were eventually prohibited from skimming the river of grass to help. It is just all swamp and sawgrass. It will probably take 3 or 4 days to clean up. It will all have to be all done by airboat, said J.C. Esslinger, a state wildlife officer. It's going to be ugly out there. It's not going to be pleasant, that is for sure.
ValuJet Flight 592 took off from Miami International Airport at 2:05 p.m., 1 hour late, with 104 passengers and a crew of five, said Federal Aviation Administration spokeswoman Christy Williams. It was scheduled to land 1 hour and 55 minutes later in Atlanta. Instead, after about 20 minutes, it bore into the ground like a power drill. What we have is a high-impact crash, said a sobering Luis Fernandez, spokesman for the Miami-Dade Fire Department. FAA Williams gave the account of the flight of 592's last minutes. The DC-9 took off, and it traveled less than 100 miles west of Miami when the crew radioed Miami Traffic Controller to report smoke billowing in the cockpit. The plane had been airborne 8 minutes. The jet then, at an altitude of 10,500 feet, turned around and tried to make it back to Miami International. At about 2:25 p.m., Miami Air Traffic Control lost Flight 592 from its radar screen. The jet went down, apparently nose first, about 14 miles northwest of Miami International. It disintegrated on impact in a desolate area of wet earth, grass patches, and trees. Dorothy?
Private pilot from Miami Beach, who was flying west at the time, told Cable News Network he saw the plane go down. Daniel Muehlhoff said he was about 2 miles from the plane, flying toward Naples, when he saw what he had at first thought was a small plane doing maneuvers. The craft was pointing down at an angle of about 75 degrees. When it hit the ground, the water and the dirt flew up, Muehlhoff said. The wreckage was like if you took your take your garbage and just throw it on the ground, it looked like that. Muehlhoff said he radioed authorities and circled until they reached the scene, which took a long time because there were no visible flames or large chunks of aircraft to focus on. Access was a major, major problem. The plane was broken up into many pieces and submerged in 4 to 5 feet of water, said Metro-Dade's Fernandez. Steve?
Helicopters from the U.S. Coast Guard, Metro Police, and the Dade Fire Department finally located the crash site and reported no signs of survivors. Just minuscule pieces of shredded metal, baggage, bodies, and a taut crater shaped like a candle flame. The crash site is very close to where Eastern Airlines L-1011 crashed in 1972, the worst local air disaster before Saturday. While rescuers searched in vain, distraught relatives of passengers rushed to the value jet counter at Miami International. Company officials quickly moved them to an auditorium where counselors were available to help them deal with their loss. Saturday afternoon, ValueJet's president spoke from Atlanta. "It's impossible to put into words how devastating something like this is," said Louis Jordan, president and chief operating officer. Atlanta-based ValueJet, which began operations in October 1993 and serves 26 cities and 17 states, has had a checkered past. The airline was one of the most successful startups in aviation history, but its rapid growth has been tainted by several accidents and questions about the reliability of its aged fleet. The FAA has ValueJet under a special emphasis inspection because of repeated safety problems. George.
Last summer, the FAA issued a special inspection notice for aircraft engines that ValueJet purchased from a Turkish airline. That investigation stemmed from a June 8, 1995 fire that destroyed a ValueJet DC-9 on a runway at Atlanta. One flight attendant was burned and minor injuries were reported, as the 57 passengers and 5 crew were evacuated. In January, a ValueJet DC-9 got stuck in the mud at Hartsfield Atlanta International Airport. The 101 passengers were bused to a terminal. Also in January, another ValueJet DC-9 with 30 people aboard slid into a snowbank after landing at Dulles International Airport outside Washington, closing the airport for nearly 3 hours. No one was hurt. A ValueJet DC-9 also skidded off an icy runway at Dulles in January of 1994, closing the airport for almost 2 hours. And Flight 592 was a McDonnell Douglas DC-932 configured with 113 passenger seats. It's powered by Pratt & Whitney JT8D-9A engines, the same that Eastern had. And at the crash site, Metro Fire and the Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission officers gathered about a half mile from the crash on the levee of the L-67 canal. Helicopters landed on the ridge, dropping off firefighters. And about 5:30 p.m., police and rescue were waiting for hazardous material specialists to check out the area before going in. There was concern about possible fuel leakage and explosion. "We have to wait until hazmat cleans it up," said E.M. Davis, a Freshwater and Game Commission officer. But as night came on, the search was called off. Rescue officials said the fuel atop the water posed too much of a risk for the airboats. "Night is falling. We're going to secure things here and make sure no one molests the area. We won't be going out there tonight," said the Metro Police Captain Rita Armas. Steve?
Here is more from the archives 10 years later, as reported in 2006 about the flight. The chain of events led to the ValueJet accident, which Gaglia called 100% preventable. Procedures were not followed, and nobody caught the missteps. 10 years ago today, the ValueJet DC-9 took off from Miami International Airport destined for Atlanta. Just 11 minutes later, it blazed into an inferno of smoke and fire, crashed into the Everglades. All 110 people aboard died. The NTSB findings. The fire was ignited by 144 volatile oxygen generating canisters removed from two value jet MD-80s by maintenance firm Sabertech Mechanics. The canisters, which can generate heat up to 500 degrees when they are triggered, were improperly secured, labeled, and packaged by now defunct Sabertech. They were then delivered for a value jet to load aboard a cargo hold of the airplane. The safety board determined that Value Jet, Sabertech, and the FAA shared responsibility for the crash. Value Jet had not properly supervised its maintenance contractor. Sabertech employees failed to properly prepare and package the oxygen generators, and the FAA failed to adequately regulate startup airlines such as Value Jet to require smoke detection and suppress systems in the DC-9 cargo compartments. Sabertech workers had signed off on FAA-approved work orders, vouching that they had been placed, that they had placed the required safety caps on the canisters to disarm them. They had not. Neither Sabertech nor ValueJet had ordered the yellow caps, which would have prevented the firing pins from discharging. The caps would have cost a total of $9.16, including tax.
And 4 months before the ValueJet crash, some FAA managers had found safety defects so severe they wanted to ground the airline. But the report of, on their findings was suppressed by top management. The airline kept flying. In 1997, ValueJet merged with Orlando-based Airways Corporation, the parent of AirTran Airways, erasing the name ValueJet from the skies. The airline reinvented itself as AirTran Holdings. The growing low-cost carrier's 112 aircraft made up one of the youngest fleets in the industry, with an average age of 3 years, said AirTran spokeswoman Judy Graham Weaver, the airline sold all of ValueJet's former planes. While AirTran's 7,000 employees still include some from ValueJet, none of the top managers is from the airline. Former ValueJet president Louis Jordan has sat on the AirTran board since the merger. We have changed a lot of things, but certainly our commitment to safety remains our top priority.
The crash also led to the first U.S. criminal prosecutions related to an airplane accident, which Gil Durman, president of the National Air Disaster Alliance, called a landmark case. It was a public accountability after ValueJet for the government and the industry because of the truth coming out, she said. And in July 1999, the state filed criminal charges against Sabertech, 110 counts of third-degree murder, 110 counts of manslaughter, one count of unlawful transportation of hazardous waste. At the same time, the U.S. Attorney's Office issued 24-count indictment against Sabertech and three former employees. ValueJet was never criminally charged. In December 1999 in Miami, Sabertech was found guilty of 8 federal criminal counts of recklessly causing hazardous material to be transported and one count of failing to train employees in the handling of hazardous material. On appeal, the court upheld only one count of failing to train employees in hazardous material handling, which carried a maximum $500,000 fine. At the state level, 220 charges were dismissed in exchange for a no-contest plea to the one charge of carrying hazardous waste. Dorothy?
Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle said Wednesday that the charges put the aviation industry on an alert that they could be held criminally responsible. They brought some sort of sense of justice, some good, if you can call it that, of this horrible loss and tragedy. By March 2001, the FAA required the retrofitting of 3,483 airplanes with fire suppression and detection systems at a total cost of $300 million. After beefing up its hazardous materials program, the agency now has 119 hazardous materials inspectors compared with 14 in 1996, said FAA spokeswoman Allison Duquette. The FAA also has formed a national certification team of safety experts to evaluate any new carrier before allowing it to fly. New airlines operate under increased supervision by FAA safety inspectors for 5 years, she said. Since the Valuejet crash, there have been no accidents involving fires in the cargo holds of passenger airlines. There have been some fires, however, involving all cargo planes, said NTSB spokesman Paul Schlamm. It's the safest period in aviation history ever. Definitely the safety record has improved in the past 10 years, Duquette said. Some of the lessons we learned since the Valuejet accident have changed how the FAA does business. Neil?
Well, the memorial that took place in 2006 by the family members and friends of those that perished in that accident was written up by Charles Raven. And just like to read about what the families go through and the thoughts that continue year after year of accidents such as Valuejet and Eastern's flight 401 that crashed in the Everglades and so many other accidents that have happened and I'm sure have been memorialized. But his article reads, "They can never be forgotten. Family members won't allow it. Neither will investigators who toiled for months looking for answers in the heat and muck of the Everglades, dodging jagged coral rock and lurking alligators." So on Thursday, the 10th anniversary of the crash of Valuejet Flight 592, relatives of the 110 deceased and those who investigated one of the nation's worst air disasters gathered in South Florida to remember and to cry. They cried again later at a procession in Kendall at the Woodlawn Park South Cemetery, where the Valuejet Memorial stood out. This monument is dedicated to the memory of those who perished in the Florida Everglades air tragedy Flight 592 on May 11, 1996, one upright stone read. Another listed the names of the dead. A third stone, lying flat on the ground in front of the other two, the two others, was in memory of the flight's captain, Candolin Chamberlain Kubek. Life goes on. By late afternoon, the group had grown to about 70 and was now gathered about 20 miles west of the Palmetto Expressway, just across the canal from the Tamiami Trail. Facing them, a series of 110 obelisks descending in height and pointing north, roses of all colors surrounded one flat gray stone on the ground, listing the 110 names. The Reverend Warner Lather of Georgia, who lost his son, Warren Lather III, sat on a stool, cane in his hand, and led a service. "We know there's no closure," he said. "We're here because we lost something that bonds us together. We're not here to make sense of it because it doesn't make any sense." They sang Amazing Grace. When they were done, 11 people took turns standing over the stone and read 10 names apiece. Then a very strong man, a man who had toiled in the muck searching for answers a long time ago, cried too. He was Jim Loftus, assistant director of the Miami-Dade Police Department. When you walk away from here, hold your family a little closer, he said, and know there are people who come here during the year to honor your sacrifice. That was the story of the Thaiyu jet. There are some connections that I know personally about that crash. First of all, I was involved in helping start a brand new airline very close to the name of AirTran, and the name of our airline that we had approved by the DOT and had our DOT certificate, not the FAA certificate, which we were working on, but our name of the name of our company was AirTran. And I wanted the assistance of a good friend of mine who was in the Atlanta Flight Standards Office, the FAA, recently had retired from Eastern, and he was an inspector, and he was the POI, which is the principal operating inspector for ValueJet. So I remember the day I walked in and said, Bob Bruce, that's the captain that was with Eastern. His name was Captain Bob Bruce. I asked him, I said, Bob, I said, how can you help me in putting together a brand new airline up here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? And I saw on his desk a book that was labeled in the very front, ValueJet. And I said, oh, it looks like you're working with another air carrier, because I had not heard of that name before, ValueJet. And he says, yeah, he says, we're working to put an airline together using DC-9s, and this is some of the material they have sent to the FAA office there to go over. And he said, I've been assigned as the principal operating inspector to put this new airline in the air. So I asked him, I said, Bob, I said, would you mind if I copied the material in that? It sure helped me a great deal when I go back up to Pittsburgh. He says, no. He says, but I will walk out of the room and let you look at it a long time if you like. So having done that, I took a few notes. And but that was a connection until later on when we were starting the little airline up in Pittsburgh. We put out a request for personnel, maintenance, reservations, and, of course, flight crew and flight attendants. And one application came across my desk there in Pittsburgh, and it was the name of the captain that had perished later on, would be the captain that had perished in the ValueJet crash, Candolin, Quebec. And I remembered that because after when the accident happened, I went through my files because I still had my files, and I went through and pulled her application out. And there she had made an application. So that's just two connections with that tragic incident event that happened 20 years ago. May the 11th of this year would be 20 years of that crash. Any other comments about the ValueJet before we move on? Quietness is heard everywhere. Well, we do have a new host, not a new host. Oh, by the way, speaking of new host, we would like to have anyone that is interested in being one of the hosts that come on regularly on our little radio show here to please let us know. I had one that came across today, and we're urgently asking him to consider being on the air with us. So, yeah, we'd like to have some young ladies out there to help us also. Dorothy gets tired of hearing all of that. Cecile is been so busy that she's unable to be with us much on the radio anymore, but we'd certainly like to hear from you. But we do have a sponsor for our reunion that will take place September 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And I told them that since they are going to be a sponsor for that event in Fort Lauderdale, we would like to share a few good words about Homestead Funding, which is a sponsor for our September reunion. And just to tell you a little bit about the company, it's been in business since 1995, and the corporate headquarters of Homestead Funding is located in Albany, New York, and they have consistently been the area's largest independent mortgage lender, and they have tens of thousands of satisfied customers that they have originated billions of dollars in residential mortgage loans and maintain a reputation of exceptional service, honesty, integrity, and financial reliability. And their goal is quite simple. They want to offer the customers outstanding service and the best mortgage financing to suit their needs. And they have a mix of traditional and innovative mortgage products that give them the ability to evaluate and deliver a wide variety of competitively priced mortgage financing solutions. They understand that not every situation is the same and that they are there to embrace that diversity in our customers by continually upgrading our product portfolio. Now, Homestead Funding, you might ask why they would be interested in sponsoring a group as old as we are, pioneers of the old Eastern, and we do have employees of the new Eastern, but they have one product that I'm very familiar with, and I just thought that they might be interested in coming down and talking about that product to folks that are over 62 years of age. And I think to qualify to listen to this show, you got to be over 62. They do have a great program for the reverse mortgage. And a lot of us have heard about reverse mortgage products. And a lot of folks are confused about it because they've been given misinformation. I do personally have a reverse mortgage, and it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, I can assure you. But there are several factors that account for the amount of money you may receive in getting a reverse mortgage, and it includes your age, your home's value, and the payment plan you choose. Depending on your specific needs, you can select a plan that works best for you. This might be a line of credit, it might be a monthly payment to you, or a lump sum, or even a customized plan that's based on your requirements. Or you might have sold a home, had a lot of equity that you received when you cashed out, having lived in that home for a long time, and had a lot of equity built up, and now you're ready to buy a new house or another house, and you're 62 years of age. Why not have that house completely mortgage-free, no payments made, and then take perhaps 50% of the equity that you got out of the home that you sold in a brand-new home and not have any mortgage payments? It's a great idea. It's not a great idea. It's a proven idea. Matter of fact, it was created many years ago, and it's an FHA product. It's an FHA program. And some of the highlights of the program is that you have to be 62 years or older. The homeowners must occupy the home as a primary residence. You retain ownership of your home. The lender does not get the title. You get the title just like you would if you purchased a home, especially here in Florida. Social Security and Medicare benefits are not affected, and funds can be used however you like, making home improvements, paying off a debt, or covering medical expenses are just a few examples. And borrowers are responsible for paying property taxes, of course, just like you would if you owned your home. Homeowners insurance is also maintained by the property owner. So those are really the only two expenses, unless you have an HOA, homeowners association, dues, then taxes and insurance, which you must maintain. So it's a great product. It's a great program, and they're going to tell their story in a special area there in the Embassy Suites that we will be having the reunion again September 23rd, 24th, 25th. And anyone interested in that program, I was so interested, we were going to take the equity we had in selling our house and buy a new house. And the mortgage broker said, well, Neil, you know, you can buy a brand new house and keep half of that equity that you've got and do whatever you want to. Buy the rehab homes and turn around and, as an investment, and resell these things. And so I got to thinking about it. I'm in real estate. I've been in real estate for 53 years, and I've also been a mortgage lender. And it just didn't dawn on me how smart the idea was until I have one now. And I just think, again, I just think it's the greatest program out there for senior citizens. So, any questions on that? Anyone want to sign up tonight?
I would if I had a home.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's another requirement. You got to have a home.
Right, exactly.
How about Dorothy telling us a little bit about what's happening in September?
Okay, in September, of course, we're having our reunion and celebration at the Embassy Suites in Fort Lauderdale. This is our second annual reunion, and it's going to be for the 23rd, 24th, and checking out on the 25th. We're going to have a meet and greet on Friday evening, and that's going to have two great entertainers. The first are going to be the Star Ballroom Dancers, and they're going to do a series of steps for us. And then we have the entertainer and singer, Richard Frank, who's going to be doing a lot of the old-time stars, and he kind of copies the artists and has a different repertoire. And, of course, you can dance along with him and you can dance after him. We're also going to have the Saturday evening banquet that's going to be from 6 to 11. After the dinner, we're going to have a special roast of one of our foremost Eastern employees. And then we're going to have a presentation of an Eastern captain and a well-known employee into the Eastern Airline Radio Show Hall of Fame. So Captain Neal has it all set for everybody, and what you need to do is to fill in your registration form that we have been sending you, or we have a new way of registering, and it's going to be online. You just have to go to the www.ealradioshow.com website and double-click on Pioneers Reunion, the tab that will be right at the top, and it will take you into the area where you'll see the whole information on the event. Neil has created it so that you can read down and see what hotel you're staying at and where it is. You can get down to the bottom of it after you read all the information that we've just explained to you now, and there's a download button for you to download the reunion event schedule, and it goes right into your computer, and you save it to your desktop. And to register is really completely easy as well. What you have to do to register is the big red register button, and you click on that red register button, and you'll see a registration form that comes up. You save that form to your desktop, and you fill it in and save it again. So you can do it right there and fill it in. Once you do, You email that registration form to host@ealradioshow.com, and you print it out for your records. If you prefer, of course, you can send it to through the mail to Neil at the EAL Radio Show address, which is right there in Ponte Verde on the website for you to see. Now you go back to the EAL Radio Show website, and you fill in your email address, and at the bottom you'll see a red, yellow button where it says Register Now. That Register button takes you into the PayPal website to pay for the event right there. And all you have to do is either use your PayPal account or a credit card of your choice, whatever credit card you want. Then after you fill that in and get your receipt from PayPal, you go back to the website and you're able to click into the Embassy Suites and make your registration for the hotel room. Everything is in one place. You don't have to go in and out that often. All it is saving your form to go in and out. But it's right there, and all you need to do is follow the directions. If anybody has any issue with that, you can always give me a call. My telephone number is 561-369-8881, and I'll be happy to help. Back to you, Neil.
Very good. Couldn't have done better myself. Matter of fact, I couldn't have done this without the help of a computer, WizKid, and I've known him for a long, long time. He worked for me at one time back in the height of the real estate boom, and he took care of all of our computers, and just a genius at it. But I tried to do what Dorothy just explained to you just then, and I had one little error there that I've got to have resolved by my computer man. So hopefully tomorrow I can get him to take that and straighten that out. But other than that, it should be very easy for you to register and to pay. Matter of fact, I went in and paid myself. Not paid myself, but I sent my $125 through PayPal, and it worked real well, really good. And so should be easy. And if you have any problems, there are phone numbers there that you can call Dorothy or myself, and we'll see if we can straighten it out. Or if you just want to put a check in the mail, print the form out, put it in a number 10 envelope, send it to us. That's the old-fashioned way. And we did that last year, pretty much most all of the registration and checks that were sent here, and it worked out real well. But we just want to make it a little bit easier for you folks out there that like to work in the computers. And so that's available to you. Also, while I had my computer geek, I hate to call him a geek, but he is a whiz kid or just super intelligent with the computer. We went down to Miami's flight attendant graduation class a few weeks ago. And I had a friend of mine that did a taping of the entire event. I didn't go through the 23 graduates, but did a few of them, I think four or five. And then he took pictures of the operations of the Eastern Building 5A, and it turned out pretty good. So I asked him to splice together the old-fashioned way of an 8-millimeter Bell and Howe. You remember that you could, if your film broke, you could splice it. And but with the new digital cameras, it's beyond my comprehension. I just can't figure out how to do things like that. But he was able to put the little clips that Emery had taken video. Emery Martinelli, our cameraman, had taken pictures during the graduation. And we got them all together. And we have posted on the website, ealradioshow.com, on the homepage, click that, and you'll see how shaky Emery was at the very beginning, and he kind of smoothed out a little bit. So somebody complained, you know, and I said, Emery, you've got to be a little steadier with the camera, but I think you'll enjoy it. It's kind of an amateur video, but and it has Ed Weagle and his lovely wife Susan are in the video, so it's a 16-minute run, and I think you'll enjoy it. So check it out. And of course, right alongside that video is Ray Valdez's video about going up to Mount Illimani. And I was hoping George would be here tonight so he could tell us more about what's happening with the movie that will be made. And but maybe we can check that out with him next time. Anything else that we need to talk about, guys and gals? Anybody awake out there?
I am. I'm here.
Yes.
Rattle your glass of ice.
Jim must be hiding somewhere.
Hey, does this come through?
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear that? That sound,
yes.
Special sound effects. That's not real, folks.
Oh, really?
No, not really.
That's going so fast.
But we... oh, there you go. Now, what was that? Before long, we'll hear Archie Bunker flushing the toilet upstairs.
There you go.
I'll have to get that one. But
oh no.
Yeah. We do have some future shows coming up that I think you'll really enjoy, and we've got a master storyteller that is with the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. He has been the editor of the Repartee magazine for several years, and he's also the webmaster, and he's a director of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, who are having their convention early September. I think it's the 4th, 5th, and 6th in Asheville, North Carolina, and he will be on telling some of his stories that you got to hear him tell a story. I mean, he's really good. And he tells a story around the campfire at hunting camp. So we'll have Captain Jim Holder on a couple of shows from now. And hopefully next week we'll have Vito back from the West Coast, and Michael Zoll will be with us. And we'll talk about the Eastern Airlines Retiree Association, EARA, who have held us together for so many years. And we'll talk more about that publication, that association, and all about everything you need to know about what the benefits of being a member of EARA is all about. So we'll have them on board next week. So that'll be our show next week. Looking forward to it. Is the program over?
Well, no. Eastern Flight 266, this is Miami Tower. You're cleared to land on runway 27. The winds are light and variable from the west at 10 miles an hour, and the present temperature at the airport is 82 degrees.
Roger, Miami. We are on short final for runway 27 right, and we're coming in.
Great landing, Captain Steve. To all of you moms out there, we hope you had a wonderful Mother's Day last week. We had a great show tonight, folks. Mr. Producer, another outstanding show. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines, the place where we worked. And we feel we're truly earned the title of Radio Voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, listeners, guests, and hosts. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us next week as we broadcast our 267th show, traveling aboard our EAL radio show, Boeing 737, destination not decided. But we want you to come along on another beautiful Eastern destination. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
We love you.
We love you.
We love you.
Thank you.